This is Mae Bressel. This is part two of World Watchers, the one-hour broadcast. And I'll continue with a list of information you can send. I can't buy all these books at the present time. I'm going to order quite a large set of them. But I want to give you the address here to send a dollar and get a list of material on video cassettes, tape cassettes, books, flags, jewelry, and pamphlets. And the address is Liberty Bell Publications. If I go too fast, just write to me and send a self-addressed stamped envelope. I'll put the information in, or call me. Liberty Bell Publications, P.O. Box 21, Reedy, R-E-E-D-Y, West Virginia, 25270. Send $1 and you can get a list of newsletters that are out, or, as I say, stamps or flags. There's books, Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf, the original edition, short sketches of Adolf Hitler, The Education of a Conservative by Professor R.P. Oliver. He was one of the first executives and founders of the John Birch Society, active with Nazis, Nazi organizations who said the Jews in America had to be vaporized. He gave that at a 4th of July speech. I won't give you the prices of the books and spend time. You can get this material. There is a pamphlet on Auschwitz, an eyewitness report by Thies Christofferson, and the introduction is by Dr. Manfred Roeder, R-O-E-D-E-R. He's the connecting link to the lie that Joseph Mengele is dead, to Hans-Ulrich Rudel, the Luftwaffe pilot, to the Mengele operation, the Odessa Network, and to the Aryan Nations, to Richard Butler and the Nazis that meet up in Idaho. And Butler worked at Lockheed's plant for Lockheed on the U-2 flight material, along with Thane Caesar, the man who really shot Robert Kennedy. When I said that Thane Caesar worked with the American Nazi Party in Riverside 5 years ago on the air, 6 years ago, people thought that was outrageous. There are articles you can send for by Dr. Goebbels, and quite a few more on by Professor Oliver, Conspiracy or Degeneracy. They range in price from $2, $4, $8. There are books by E.P. Yockey, Y-O-C-K-E-Y, and he was the inspiration behind Willie Cardo and Liberty Lobby, who makes this material available for you. There's a book, The Destruction of Dresden, by David Irving. He writes about Nazi Germany from a right-wing point of view. Quite a few things on Yockey and Oliver. There's an article, The Story of the Waffen-SS by de Grell. De Grell has become the new person that Simon Wiesenthal wants to get. Now that he has lied about Joseph Mengele, he wants de Grell. He has to keep the Institute going for something. And I almost believe with the behavior of these people in the Jewish community that maybe, no, I won't say it, but Willie Cardo must have something right. I'll tell you, the way the Jews and the concerned Gentiles respond, it's ridiculous. They have a bulletin here, $1.75, by Matt Cole, a member of the Posse Comitatus, who was killed. History and Biology, Professor Avila is a doctor. Henry Ford Sr., he has a four-volume set on the Jews. A $5 trillion secret, Colonel Dahl, that was Franklin Roosevelt's son-in-law. A lot of material on warfare courses by Commander George Lincoln Rockwell. That was the American Nazi Party before William Pierce took it over. William Pierce had contracts with the Air Force and United Technology, and then went into Rockwell's office. Rockwell and Lee Harvey Oswald, in some way, were familiar. Oswald had his name and telephone number. I don't know that he ever saw him, but they had a lot of friends in common. Besides Commander Rockwell and his material, there's a list of about 40 or 50 books that are very valuable. And then they throw Teddy Bear, The True Story of Chappaquiddick, of course. And they have the price of the book, The UFOs, The Nazi Secret Weapon. It's $7, and it's very valuable. Samizdat publisher combines here with Liberty, maybe because Samizdat was the fellow in charge of that. Mr. Zundel got a year-and-a-half sentence for saying there was no Holocaust. But I've given you the address. You can send for these. There are Third Reich collector items. You can have large flags with a swastika, the Third Reich battle flag, the Luftwaffe flag, the SS headquarters flag. I'm going to order the miniatures. The large ones are $24.50. They're 6 feet square, but I can get the little ones. They're only 1.5 feet, and they have three or more colors for $10 each. I can get three flags to hang on my front yard if I want. On Hermann Goering's personal standard, the Panzer Division, they have medals and pins. If you want your swastika armbands, they're $5. Stick pin, skull cap badges, Luftwaffe stick pin, and Luftwaffe breast badge, Eagle swastika, belt buckle. You can get all the Nazi memorabilia that is very current for them. You can get the SS skull medallion with a neck chain for only $7. We should have a auction and let you see some of this. You can get material envelope stuffers, 100 of them, to put in your mail for $1.50. Hitler was right. Communism is Jewish. There are excerpts from a speech by Major General Willoughby. There are 100 of them for $1.50, and you can get 1,000 of them for $12. I'll send for that and put that in my correspondence with you, or send it out with a tape. You don't have to bother. As a gift to subscribers, I'll give you from the Nazis in America, Charles Willoughby's speeches. That is Mr. Wiedenbach from the Kriegs Academy, who is chief of intelligence for Douglas MacArthur. Many of you know, if you don't know that name, you call me. I've had him on the air so much. The Holocaust Swindle is reprints of pamphlets. They're really cheap. You get 20 of them for $1.50, a complete set, and you get the story of Begin's blood-soaked past, an outline of the prodigals, Fable of the Ducks, and by Commander Rockwell of the American Nazi Party, what fascism really was, and a non-kosher interview with Menachem Begin. And they have La Via Dolorosa of Simon Wiesenthal. I remember Martin Lucifer Kuhn. Oh, this, I'm not going to give you all of this. You can get reprints and pamphlets by Professor Oliver, the one that say Jews should be wiped out. You can get Germany and the True Story of the Third Reich, 5 for $1.50. You can get 40 copies of Jews, the Real Sharks, for $1.50. You can buy 5 copies of the LSD Murders and Other Terminations with Extreme Prejudice, Kosher Food Racket, Exposed Atrocity Propaganda, and Samizdat Holocaust Trial and Awakening. You can get these pamphlets. You can get large books from $12 to $8. You can buy records, the long-playing record, Survival of the White Race. I'm going to start investing in these. I think this is really interesting. This is something Wiesenthal doesn't talk about very much, you notice? You can buy video cassettes for $50, The Triumph of the Will. I suppose that's G. Gordon Liddy speaking German. Then you get marching tapes, the Horst Wessel. You can get the German marching tapes, and you can get speeches of Commander George Lincoln Rockwell at his alma mater, Brown University. Did you know that George Lincoln Rockwell, the head of the American Nazi Party, went to Brown University? And you can buy the soundtrack of the Nazi rallies. There's some in foreign languages. I don't think many of my listeners would want that. The Hoax of the 20th Century, that's only $7. The fact that there was no Holocaust, and the four books of Henry Ford, you can get combined for $35 for around $2,000, maybe $1,000. You'd know what's going on in America. But this goes out at mass printing. And I'm going to start sending for some of this. I have a little bit, but not enough, and I'll share this with you. Now, going to another subject, but not separate from it, I was down in Los Angeles this past week, and of course the newspaper was all filled with the Louis Farrakhan visit. I was going to the forum in Inglewood, and people that I knew told me that the tickets were sold out. I found out later, I think they were diverting me from going because there were supposed to be places for 18,000. I don't think that were there were that many. But Farrakhan came into Los Angeles for his first major speech after receiving $5 million from Muammar Gaddafi. Gaddafi has a new peace alliance with the King of Morocco. The public relations firm in charge of King of Morocco is Robert Keith Gray and the former ambassador at large, going back and forth with Vernon Walter. These are the two highest spooks. Vernon Walters, of course, being a representative of the Knights of Malta and the intelligence community. All of his career, he's now ambassador to the UN. So money is poured from Gaddafi, and I think it came directly from the CIA funds, and they were going to test the waters of Mayor Bradley just in case he wanted to run against Mr. Duke Magian as governor again, or for political purposes. So they dumped Farrakhan in Los Angeles and said, okay, Bradley, do you go along with the Jews or do you denounce Farrakhan? And he made a deal with Louis Farrakhan. If I'm not hard on you, will you tone down on the Jews because there's a lot of Jews in this town? And so he claims he toned Farrakhan a little bit, and Farrakhan was speaking at the forum, and he is plenty intelligent. Don't underestimate Louis Farrakhan. And he said, if I'm telling a lie, correct me. And if I'm telling the truth, you better listen to me. And this is what I say all the time on World Watchers. If I'm telling you a lie, write to me, correct me, find the information that's wrong. But if I'm telling the truth, you better wake up out there, because time's running out, and these guys have a lot of money and a lot of muscle. He calls Judaism a dirty religion. He didn't this last week during the campaign. He broke up the Democratic Party when Jesse Jackson was his friend by saying it was a dirty religion and Hitler was a great man. But he did say that he is against the idea that the Jews say they're the chosen people. He said in his speech, I have a problem with the Jewish people, not because I'm hateful of Jewish people, but because I have declared to the world they are not the chosen people of God. As far as he's concerned, he's as much chosen as the Jews. Now, just this last year, I had some quotations on the air from the play The Portage to San Cristobal of Adolf Hitler by George Steiner. It came out in 1979, Simon and Schuster. And this was the story of the Mossad, five or six agents capturing Hitler in the jungle in Brazil and realizing there never would be a trial, and how Hitler defended himself in the last act of the play. He gives a 35-minute speech. Some of you remember it, or some of you may not have heard it, but in this particular play, and I've never read it straight through with you, Hitler's speech, but it's totally brilliant, and he defends himself by saying, I understand where you get your secret power, the secret power of your teaching, of yours, that you're a chosen people, chosen by God for his own. And the minute you think you are chosen, you have secret power. And he says all of that is lies, to believe that you, and this is the year 5,900 and something, I should know, the Jewish New Year began last night, but I don't remember as the years roll on, because they're old enough to know better for what they're doing, arming the dictatorships, Nicaragua, South Africa, Argentina, feeding the Nazi governments throughout the world. Maybe you know I lost interest in that a long time ago. But in the role of the man playing Adolf Hitler that Steiner has, he says that you promised for eternity you would rule the world. And Hitler says, I was only going to be here for 1,000 years, and you throw in eternity. So you have to get rid of your holy books because they smell of blood. And Hitler is saying that when people think they're chosen to fill their destiny, then everyone else has to be killed. And you've chosen, he says to the Mossad agents, a mysterious single person called God that you can't see or look up to in terms of being a being. And this unknown thing creates everything you do. And he went on to say that you use the sword, that you slaughter the city because of an idea, because of a vexation over words, and that you alter the human soul and invent one leader, a Moses or Joshua or somebody who you can't see. And from there, you set everyone apart and you choose, you know, to call them the Goyim. That's what the Jews do. They call Gentiles Goyim. The Jews set themselves apart. That's an important thing that is not in this play, but someday I want to write about it, is the separation of the German Jew to the Eastern European Jew. They considered them dirt and didn't care if they died. They really thought that Hitler was doing a favor. And this has never yet, at least I haven't seen it explained in literature, but I grew up with it, the difference between a German Jew and an Eastern European Jew. And they thought themselves apart. And, of course, in the Orthodox Church temple, the men can't sit with the women. Just tragically, this past week in Krakow, you might have read about the Bar Mitzvah, where the entire Jewish community is dying, and there's a handful of older people, and they said, would you send us a bar mitzvah so we could see a young person, you know, doing this ceremony over again as we did it when we were young. And it's an Orthodox synagogue, and they wanted to hear the service. And then the Americans had the nerve to send a very handsome young man with a female rabbi, and females sit upstairs, separate from men. They can't sit with men in the Orthodox Church, in the Orthodox Temple. And they sent this rabbi, was a woman, which is so offensive to the tradition. These are old people that are dying. This is what Jews do to each other. If the U.S. Information Service or Voice of America answered the needs of Ronald Reagan and said, okay, you want a service, we'll send you a rabbi, and they sent a woman. It would be a dirty anti-Semitic trick. But in this case, the Jews brought a female rabbi and hurt each other. And Farrakhan, I don't believe, can hurt the Jews as much as they are hurting each other. And what he's saying, he should be listened to because he is very important to the American scene and what's going to happen in this country. Now, Mayor Bradley was castigated. The LA Herald had a large story September 14th by Harvey Schechter. Mayor Bradley, why didn't you speak out against hate? They describe Harvey Schechter, the regional director of the Pacific Southwest of the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. Do you ever hear Harvey Schechter talk about the Aryan Nations? Is he a household word with you talking about Richard Butler or Manfred Roeder or Karl Heinz Hoffmann, you know, the fellow I was talking about last week, and what is going on in Germany and Europe and in the United States, or this organization that publishes all the literature that Germany had arming us with, the badges, the armbands, the flags, the jewelry, the real costumes, the clothes, the books, the tapes, the videos. Where is Mr. Schechter? No, it's racism, pure and simple. He's picking on a black mayor, dividing this country and dividing the city of Los Angeles, because it's very powerful in electing future presidents and people that run this country. Now, you never hear Mr. Schechter talk about the Coalition for Peace Through Strength that I want to talk about next week, the religious fundamentalists. Did these Jews ever take Ronald Reagan and George Bush apart when their darling Reverend Falwell said that the Jews were going to burn in hell, that we're going to have this time where they're separated in this tribulation? Do they ever talk about that powerful Coalition of Peace Through Strength and the people on, like John Singlau with his Nazi Waffen-SS connections in the World Anti-Communist League, or with General Lyman Lemitzer? As part of that, he covered up with Ronald Reagan the CIA investigation of the murder of the President of the United States that did involve Nazis, South American and European Nazis. They're picking out a black man, and the whole issue is to spread Farrakhan, to break them apart and check their hypocrisy, and it works. And of course, the big articles by these Jewish writers is pathetic in its conversation in L.A. for a black mayor to be picked apart by a person who's telling you that I am as much chosen as they are. Now, he's absolutely right. Nobody cares what Falwell says, and I think Farrakhan is chosen to be a god as much as any one that the Jews think is their god. If you think you are, you are, and that's all he's saying. You gave us the idea. That's what Mr. Steiner said in the play. You gave us the idea, and we're taking it. Now, enjoying that whole Farrakhan scene in Los Angeles, between Mayor Bradley, who used to work with the Los Angeles Police Department when Patty Hearst was kidnapped and played a very political role in he worked with, as mayor and in the police department, with the people who set up the kidnapping. Donald DeFries, who was a member of the police department, and Squad 19 and all those things were his agencies before he became mayor. But eating all this up was George Bush in Los Angeles. And as I say, Robert Keith Gray, William Casey, and the whole gang, I believe, are behind this whole operation with Gaddafi and Farrakhan. So there's a picture in the LA Herald of Governor Duke Machin and Vice President Bush going to a barbecue. Bush is smiling. It's called California Dreaming. Bush, Duke, Ticket, and 88. While the blacks are fighting each other out, Farrakhan and Tom Bradley are fighting it out. Then that wasn't enough. In the same picture they have, paper, they had another picture of George Bush. VP visits L.A., Vice President Bush speaks, you know, to officials at Universal Studio. Isn't that what he came for that week, to go to Universal Studio? Or when Farrakhan was there, while they were having their confrontation of what the mayor should do, right next to the picture of Bush is the story, Mayor Tom Bradley has decided to keep an agreement in a private meeting with local black leaders to withhold comment of controversial Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan until after Farrakhan gives a planned speech. And it says Bradley keeps agreement to stay silent, and next to it is the picture of George Bush. Then another picture of George Bush in the paper holding a shirt, this time from the next day. Senor Bush takes to the streets to Olivera Street. He went to Universal Studios. Then he goes down with the poorest people are eating the greasiest food in the worst tourist trap in the United States, probably, and holds up a shirt, George Bush 88. The best thing about Oliver Street is that little candied lollipops are made of clear sugar. They're triangle-shaped, and you lick them. If you chew them, you break your teeth, even when you're young. And that's, well, there's certain things I like about it, the Mexican dresses and so forth. George Bush is down there at Oliver Street enjoying the mirror struggle. The City Hall is just a few blocks away. Now, jumping away from George Bush, and I want to get back to him in one second, or I may as well do it right now. The President of the United States, Ronald Reagan, is being picked on a little now, getting ready, maybe with his physical condition, to get rid of him in a psychological way. And George Bush, the former director of CIA, would slide himself in. And so along with this, Washington Post, September the 1st, is a story by David Broder. Scholars of the presidency find Reagan hard to reckon. And it goes on, there's a big box. Reagan has a much greater capacity for governing. He is opting for current popularity rather than a place of history which would be impregnable. And they don't understand why he wouldn't go for that place in history. Then it goes into a discussion. There was a conference where at the University of California where various professors got together from Berkeley and Davis and Stanford to talk about the mind of Ronald Reagan. Now, this may have been going on when the other men were in office, but I don't quite remember the same kind of a subject. It's dated New Orleans, August 31st. To one professor from Berkeley, Reagan is an old actor living his favorite movie roles. To another, he's a political strategist who has flummoxed the Democrats. To the University of California colleague from Davis, he's the most successful political leader since Roosevelt. A scholar from Stanford asserts there is no Teflon protecting Reagan, while a professor from George Washington wonders how a person so unattentive to detail, so ignorant of facts, so disengaged, and so willing to delegate can be viewed as a success by the public and by the Washington power brokers. Four scholars who voted for Reagan, all voted for him, agreed in a panel discussion he did little to establish the intellectual or political base for any long-term conservative dominance, while others find it ironic that while Calvin Coolidge's portrait hangs in the White House, Reagan spends his second term political capital in the Capitol defending Social Security and relics of the New Deal. And the article is deciding on the mentality of Ronald Reagan, and a conclusion of one of the members, Norman Thomas, the University of Cincinnati, my assessment is schizophrenic, that Reagan is schizophrenic. And it goes on to say there's a lot of company in that regard. And this is a long article chewing him apart, what they like about him, don't like about him, but even, as I say, calling him schizophrenic, and wondering just where he's going and what is he doing. And they're analyzing a president in power, who was just reelected, with a former director of the CIA as vice president, and sort of laying his brains out on a table and discussing the man. Now, George Bush can't be taken lightly as the CIA director, and as problems mount, Reagan isn't addressing them. So pretty soon there's going to be a push and shove about what this administration is about. He first ran on the pledge to balance the budget and get rid of the debt. The Los Angeles Times has a story September the 11th, this past Wednesday. Many of you might have seen your newspapers. The administration asked Congress to raise the debt ceiling to $2.078 trillion by October the 15th. I was at a dinner party several weeks ago where I mentioned that our debt was going to $2 trillion, the president wanted it, and a young person there said that's not true. Where are my sources? He argued with me, and I said, I'll mail you the story, and he said, don't do it. He didn't want it. No, if I was right, he didn't want the information. Struggle with that one. That's the kind of way people handle. I might have told you the story last week. The way they handle news is, don't show me, I'll live with my fantasies. You know, this is the problem, one of the problems in the United States, because it's happening with educated people. So after this, that was on a Saturday night, the following Wednesday, there was this story. The Reagan administration on Tuesday asked Congress to raise the national debt above the $2 trillion, saying that without the new borrowing authority, the United States Treasury would be broke by October the 15th. That's 1 month less than 1 day, yes, a month from this past month ahead, rather. But this is September 15th, 16th, rather. October the 15th, less than a month, the Treasury will be broke. John J. Niehenke, N-I-E-H-E-N-K-E, acting Assistant Treasury Secretary for Domestic Finance, told the Senate Finance Subcommittee on Taxation and Debt Management that the debt limit was merely a recognition of obligations the government has already made, and he told the Congressional Committee that we spend $170 billion a year, more than half of what the Treasury collects in income taxes from individuals to pay is paid to service the debt. We feed the debt $170 billion a year, and we take in half of that, just half of that, to pay from our income taxes. And you might have read about the top corporations in the United States that pay no taxes at all. And where is the Grace Commission and the other group where they get off paying the taxes, and we're putting people in employment or buying our products overseas so that Americans aren't earning money and can't put taxes into it, such as steel and clothing and fabric and shoes. And you know the controversies going on. If you don't earn, you can't pay your taxes, and more people are getting out of those jobs. There is greater employment, Ronald Reagan says, but if you see it's the grannies at the fried chicken places and at McDonald's and Jack in the Box, and they can work for $2 to $3 eventually an hour. They may be employed, but what's going into the tax bracket, and they probably have Social Security behind them. Now, behind Ronald Reagan, again, as his vice president, our CIA director, George Bush, eating his tacos down on Olivero Street in Los Angeles and going to Universal Studio to give his little presentation or appearance. There were two articles by William Safire, and I want to share particularly the second one because it has to do with George Bush and E.F. Hutton. And I'll go through it quickly. I won't have enough time to do the whole thing. I hoped I would. In an article, May 14th, he talks about Scott Pierce working for E.F. Hutton, who replaced George Ball and took over when E.F. Hutton was in dire problems of being investigated, and that Pierce is the sister of Barbara Bush, the brother-in-law of George Bush, and he took over as head of E.F. Hutton as the investigation heated up, and that was in May. Now, this past week, William Safire had a story in the New York Times, the L.A. Herald, the E.F. Hutton case. You can't commit a felony without a felon, and he goes into the fact how U.S. former Attorney General Griffin Bell let E.F. Hutton people off the hook for their check hiding. They were writing and giving loans to people into the billions of dollars. The people happened to be mafia and organized crime, among other things, such as the Boston Bank and the Continental Illinois and Chicago. And Ed Meese lied about the amount of people that got immunity, and Safire talks about that. Then he talked about a luncheon that William French Smith had at a restaurant in Washington with Robert Foman, F-O-M-O-N, of E.F. Hutton. But the important thing was that the luncheon was set up by a man named Upshur Moorhead. Moorhead was an advance man for George Bush. He was an aide to George Bush, who left George Bush to work for E.F. Hutton and arranged a luncheon with the Attorney General and the agent, Mr. Foman, from Hutton. So the point of this story is that George Bush's brother-in-law became the president of E.F. Hutton to replace Mr. Ball, and George Bush's advance man, it wasn't enough that one relative was involved, but the advance man became the man who set up the liaison between the Justice Department and E.F. Hutton. And after the luncheon, the case was literally dropped, and nobody was to be prosecuted, and they cut a deal. Now, this article by Safire says the criminal division of the Justice Department brought in E.F. Hutton's defense team, including lawyer William Hundley, to take care of the defense of E.F. Hutton when they cut a deal. If you read the book Spooks by Jim Hogan or any Watergate book, I'm just citing Hogan now, he tells about William Hundley. He worked on the part of the Get Hoffa Squad. And remember, Jackie Presser, the Teamsters, got off, and they got rid of Hoffa officially by being killed. And Raymond Donovan, Secretary of Labor, was involved hiring a man who killed Jimmy Hoffa. William Hunley was the attorney for John Mitchell, the Attorney General of the United States. That was his client. He worked for Jim Neal, one of the Hoffa prosecutors. And he also, Hunley, represented the people who prosecuted John Mitchell and Marie Stans, and they got off with a light prosecution tied to the Vesco Committee. And, of course, Vesco is floating around and still has ties to the United States government, even though he's down in Cuba. William Hunley was involved in the Justice Department work with Mr. Pelequin, who set up Intertel. They took over the Howard Hughes organization when that non-existent, non-seeing person went down to the Bahamas and left Las Vegas. Hunley is a man who is privy to all the top secrets, just as the top attorneys, I'm thinking of Edward Bennett Williams, that kind of attorney who knows, or F. Lee Bailey, and some of these CIA attorneys who know so much. So the E.F. Hutton story was covered up. No men were prosecuted. And our future president of the United States, I think he probably will make it, particularly dividing the Democratic Party, George Bush, has a brother-in-law and an aide working with E.F. Hutton from the inside and working with the Justice Department to make sure that none of their dirt comes out in the open, and that will be our future president someday. Well, we're out of time. I'll do more on Bush next week. I want to continue because he is moving to that very high position. He's very visible. Meanwhile, this hour is up, and I'll be back with you. It's Mae Brussel. I'll be back with you next week.